When I saw the title of your book, The Bard and the Book, How the First Folio Saved the Plays of William Shakespeare from Oblivion, I thought, what a silly idea. Who's going to read a kid's book about the first folio? But then I realized that I have written a pop-up kid's book about all of Shakespeare's works. So really, who had the sillier idea, you or me?
I'm jealous. Pop-up sounds much better.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 18th year, number 916, The Bard's Book. Anne Bossom writes about history for readers of all ages, and her latest book, The Bard and the Book, tells the story of the creation of the first folio, the first collection of Shakespeare's plays published in 1623, in fun and surprisingly complete detail, and that includes the delightful illustrations by Marta Sevilla. I started my conversation with Anne by comparing our Shakespeare folio origin stories. I confess that my introduction to the creation of the first folio was through Lauren Gunderson's play, The Book of Will, in which I had the privilege of playing both Richard Burbage and William Jaggard in the Midwest premiere here at Northlight Theater in Chicago. And so I would have loved this book, your book, when I was a kid, because then I would have known about these characters that I only got introduced to in my 50s. Was that your origin story regarding the first folio?
Yeah, thank goodness for Lauren Gunderson. Where would we be if she hadn't written that play? And I tell the story in the author's note in the back of my book, how I'm a my local Shakespeare theater is the American Players Theater in Spring Green, Wisconsin. And I go to every show at least once. And when I went to the Book of Will by the intermission, I'm like, is this really true? If it's true, then I'm writing a book about it for kids. And I went back to see the show two more times because it's just such a fantastic production. Anybody who can catch it should, wherever it's put on, and it's a fantastic play. And you know, it kept me busy and curious for, you know, a year or more, just trying to figure out where the facts fell.
Well, and fascinatingly, your book comes out on the heels of Chris Lataurus's book about the first folio, which I read and interviewed Chris for on the podcast. And it turns out that Lauren got her facts really right.
She was remarkably accurate. She kind of hit on Pericles a little bit more than I think it deserved, but that was just a gag. So we'll forgive her that. Yeah.
And I don't think that's her true opinion. My sense is it's not her true opinion. What made you think I'm going to write about the first folio? And you know how I'll do it for kids. What made you think that was the best idea?
Well, because 25 years ago, that was my career decision, was that I was going to write for kids in general. And I've been doing it ever since. So naturally, any idea I have, I think about it through a young person's lens, anywhere from pre-readers to teens. So this just was like, this is fascinating. Kids will love this. It just felt right.
I think you're really right. And I have had the experience. I've now written two children's books, but I cut my professional theatrical teeth doing children's theater. Mm-hmm. And I've said before, I think it's a magnificent training ground, because if you can communicate to and keep an audience of 500 5 to 7 year olds quiet and engaged, you can do that for anybody. Do you
Absolutely.
Find the same thing when you're writing prose?
Absolutely. I think people think, oh, well, it's for kids, so it's easier. It is not. You can't assume any prior knowledge. You've got to define everything, particularly if you're writing for a younger age group. You can't assume they have any historical context. And And I kind of like that challenge. Then you get, it's a tabula rasa. You're the first, you know, they're crossing the ocean with you and you get to lead them through the wilderness. I'm mixing my metaphors, but you know what I mean? It's just, it's thrilling to be able to take a young mind and get it fired up about something.
What was the most challenging aspect of breaking down the history of the first folio? Because it encompasses so many aspects of not only artistic, theatrical history, but the history of publications, the history of English royalty, the history of William Shakespeare as a writer and actor and author. How did you do it?
Drafts. There was more than one draft. I had a fantastic editor that I'd worked with before, who's as devoted to Shakespeare and theater as I am, and just sort of trial and error. And I don't use a lot of paper drafts anymore, but I definitely did for this book. Literally trying to figure out, well, how am I going to fit these pieces together so that there's a storyline. But there's also this educational component that builds as we go through the book. And just, right. It was like a puzzle and putting it together until it felt right.
Well, and the art is so engaging as well. Did that take you by surprise, or did you have some say in the creation of the images as well?
So the book is illustrated with this hybrid combination of historical imagery, and that was all on me. I found that. Mm. And then, fresh illustrations, commissioned illustrations from Marta Sevilla, a Spanish artist. And the publisher connected her to this project, which is typical of illustrators of children's books. I did not communicate with her until after the book came out. And I wrote her to just say how in love I am with the artwork. I couldn't have gotten anything better made to order. It's got the same whimsical, engaging sort of hilarious tone to it that I tried to bring to the text. And even though there was a language barrier, because English is not her first language, she got that intrinsically and just replicated it perfectly. She has such a great sense of humor.
It comes across. That really comes across. And your publisher was good enough to send me both a PDF and a hard copy of the book. And the PDF is handsome. It's fine. But the book is such a lovely thing to hold in your hands and to page through. It's I can imagine a kid sitting down with this at a variety of different ages and right. then picking up new stuff the older they get.
Right. And, you know, adults are allowed to read it too. I've had so many friends of mine who are our ages who have been like, I had no idea. This is amazing. And the advantage is that it's a shorter read. So you can glean a lot of information very quickly.
Well, and it's a great, this is the probably the wrong image for a child, but it's the gateway drug into.
Absolutely.
You know,
no, that was totally in my mind as I was working. It's like, how can I be the antidote for the burned out teenagers who are being dragged to a performance that they have no engagement in whatsoever? I want them to be anticipating it because they've heard of Shakespeare. They know what the first folio is. They know what a miracle it is that so many of these texts survived. Yeah. And, you know, hooray for this 400-year-old book. It's something to be celebrated.
Well, and I love that word miracle, too, because it really is. And it's one of the wonders of Lauren's yeah. play is that you see the many ways in which the first folio might not have happened.
Right. And even the subsequent folios, there's a whole section in the book that deals with the survival of, you know, we think maybe 750 were printed. We know, what is it, 235? Of where they're located. And just that's its own whole story of the detective work that it's taken to identify those. But also all the ways that books don't survive, and including the 1666 Great Fire of London, which consumed a large portion of the third folio because it had just come out. not to mention first folios that were sitting in people's homes that yeah. burned to the ground. It is a miracle.
Hi, my name is Lauren Gunderson. I'm the playwright for The Book of Will, among other plays, and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This fall of 2024, we'll be performing the special election edition of The Complete History of America Abridged in Illinois, Maryland, Virginia, Kentucky, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Colorado. Check out the touring page at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. Now back to my conversation with Anne Bossom, talking about her new book, The Bard and the Book, How the First Folio Saved the Plays of William Shakespeare from Oblivion. It's so wonderful that we're speaking today as we record Friday, June 21st. This is the day that the Folger Shakespeare Library is reopening, and I know you and I share a connection to the Folger as well. How did you get connected to the Folger?
I have known of the Folger most of my life. My dad was a historian, and one summer he did research at the Folger. And so I had heard of it, from before I was a teen and had been there. I had the good fortune to go to high school in the Washington, D.C. area. And I actually did a volunteer assignment at the Folger for a half a year or for a semester. And so I'd been in the Folger, but I'd never been in the reading room, the research area, which is, even in 2019, when I was there just days literally before it closed down for the renovation, it felt like such sacred space. Yeah. It was such a privilege to walk through those doors and sit where generations of scholars have sat and be given the privilege of seeing just about anything you wanted in the collection. And they were so kind to literally bring me a first folio and let me hold it, turn the pages, and truly see the book that I was writing a book about. I'm forever grateful for that.
Yeah, and it's funny, the new renovated library is as welcoming physically as I have always found the people at the Folger to be personally. And I think that was so smart to redesign it in such a way that it makes people want to wander in and not look at this foreboding edifice and think, well, that place isn't for me. Because, of course, Shakespeare is for everyone. Or as I like to say, he's not for everyone because nothing's for everyone. He's for anyone who wants him.
Excellent. Yes. And it's kind of killing me that I'm here in Wisconsin and not out at those wonderful openings day. And it's Midsummer's Day. And what a fitting time for the Folger to spring back to life.
You're right. It didn't even occur to me that it's literally Midsummer's Day. Yeah. That's perfect. Will your next project be digging into how Homer wrote down the Odyssey?
No, my heart belongs to Will. I don't know if I'll be able to wring anything else out about him, but for now I'm just enjoying the fact that I got to live this dream and bring this book out, and it's been so well received. And I had the chance to do some school visits at the end of the school year with children who were so fired up about Shakespeare. It was very inspiring. Eighth graders of all things. I was like, man, this is gonna be a tough assignment. 250 eighth graders in a gym, but we had such a blast. And it's just inspiring to see how current and alive these stories can be for the next generation, and they certainly have enriched my life for decades.
I think, and I'm hoping, we have figured out that Shakespeare must be presented in a fun way, because he is meant to be fun and entertaining. I encountered him first on stage, thankfully. So I knew that it was exciting. And when I read him and couldn't make sense of him on the page, I knew that he is supposed to make sense on the stage. I just needed to figure out how, and that's been my life.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and sharing that joy with generations, young and old, is a real kick. You know, what a pleasure you've had, and all of the people who've been able to experience your shows, and maybe they're the gateway too that have led them to Hamlet, not the prologue or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Right. I love that you and I, as well-intentioned as we are the pushers who are
exactly.
addicting young people to Shakespeare.
Yes, yes. My beloved American Players Theater, they do fall shows and fall matinees for middle school and high school kids. And I go every year to every one of them, just as a surreptitiously to spy on the kids. And sure. And I don't care how jaded some of them are at the beginning of a show like Hamlet or something, they're on the edge of their seats and they're applauding on their feet by the end. And that's the joy of Shakespeare.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Anne Bossom's new book, The Bard and the Book, How the First Folio Saved the Plays of William Shakespeare from Oblivion, is on sale everywhere, and you can find out more information about Anne and her writing by going to her website, annebossom.com. Then send us your Shakespearean children's book via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com, or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com. Thanks, as always, to blind printer Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Jonathan S. Nunn. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Lauren Gunderson, author of The Book of Will, whose newest play, A Room in the Castle, based on the Women of Hamlet, will have its world premiere next season at the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company and the Folger Theater in Washington, D.C. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 916 2748ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
It's been a pleasure, and I will cross paths with you at APT or somewhere again, I hope.
I look forward to that.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.